broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Continually in your boardroom, you would point out who you found to be
last attractive. Night and earlier today, our intelligence and law enforcement...
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is strong, determined, and
continually
trusting.
In your boardroom, you would point out who you found to be attractive or not.
Ball tapping.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, where we go through the looking glass, we go beyond, we go places talk shows can't go, won't go, couldn't go, don't have the talent for. You know the drill, man. Audience members puke their guts out while watching the new Danny Boyle film. Well, that happened the last Danny Boyle film, didn't it? No, it didn't. The last Danny Boyle film was Slumdog Millionaire. What is going on? Well, he made a movie about that young man, that rock climber whose arm got caught in that boulder. Also, a man beats the priest he says molested him as a child, and a boss encourages his employees to vote for the Republicans if they want a raise. 877-876-PHIL is our number. And what are we starting out with here, man? What's the story we're starting out with here, man? What's the story we're starting out with? Are we starting out with the guy with the movie? I don't know what, Danny Boyle? Our website is philhendryshow.com, and over there you can get all of the downloads that you want. All of the quality audio that is Phil Hendry audio is available on our website. There's a lot of bootleg garbage out there, the audio of which is crap. And we're continually fighting that. But the fact is, on our website, with thousands of hours of archives and downloads and our daily archives, our daily podcasts, I should say, as well as our daily video cast, you can watch right now if you're watching us online. It's all worth it. Get a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com. All right. Audience vomits and faints during a Franco movie.
Man, you got to be sicker than hell to... I don't even believe this.
Is this true? Are they saying that to make the movie more attractive?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's what I think.
It's a good question. I mean, I don't know. There have been so many stories about movies down through the years having to do with the audience did this and the audience did that, that you wonder whether you're being jacked around by people. I've heard a story that has gone on for decades, that when the very first Frankenstein movie came out with Boris Karloff, you guys know this one?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the first one, right?
The first one, the black and white. That when the first, there's a shot in that movie of Frankenstein, the very first shot of the monster, played by Boris Karloff, is from the neck up. So you see this very crisp black and white image of this hideous face. And the story is that people were running out of the theaters. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's because I've seen so many movies and I've seen so many special effects that it's tough for me to believe. But I've heard all kinds of horse dung. And I've gone to see these movies where they said, oh, a guy threw up and another person did this. And the two films that are in my memory, what's the most violent movie you heard about, Bud?
When they talked about the Passion on Jesus and everything they'd done.
Passions of the Christ.
Yeah, that's the one I heard. That one and Saving Private Ryan, it says, all messed up, you know.
Okay, those are two good examples. Saving Private Ryan and The Passion of the Christ. Both of those films were heralded as the most gruesome, violent, upsetting films ever. Now, I have a philosophy, and the philosophy is the following thing. As much as the film industry wants to tell us that they're just showing us real life, they do not show us real life. They do not show us real life. They don't even come close to showing us real life, because if they were showing us real life, we would be as traumatized as those individuals who that stuff happens to in real life. We wouldn't be laughing at it. We wouldn't be going to see it gleefully and earnestly. So, no, they don't. Now, Saving Private Ryan and Passions of the Christ, those are two good examples, because when I went to see those movies, they were violent and they were disturbing, but that was not anything that I wasn't even close to throwing up, you know.
You didn't want to throw up when a guy picked a leg up?
No, he didn't pick his leg up. He picked up his arm, if you've seen it.
Yeah, that's something in his arm.
Did I want to throw? No, I didn't want to throw up.
That's the part I want to puke.
Oh, bull crap, you didn't want to puke, man. We saw that movie the other night. When the guy picked his arm up off the beach?
Yeah.
You didn't want to puke.
Yeah, but I mean, it was gross.
Okay, it was gross. I'm not saying that it wasn't. I'm not saying that it wasn't horrible. I'm not saying that it wasn't. You know, these are metaphors, man. When you're watching a movie, you're not watching what's happening. You're watching a representation of reality. You're watching actors doing their best to recreate a reality on film, and they're doing it in a way that the story is going to sequence together and make sense. Because God knows, if you were there on those days, Omaha Beach, there wasn't any story making any sense. All you knew is you were alive and you didn't want to get dead. So when they say that people are running out of the theater throwing up, I don't know. Franco says that he was at the London Film Festival event with Britt Boyle and Aaron. Britt Boyle, I guess, is the wife of the director. Anyway, the actor admitted people fainted during test screenings. People fainted. Now, test screenings are when you just pack about 300 people into a movie theater and get their opinion as they pour out like cattle out of a cattle car. They might have been fainting because the place stunk. They got 9,000 people crammed in there.
Yeah, I went to one of those one time in a valley. It smelled bad.
Right.
Yeah, maybe that's because you showed up.
Maybe.
Okay, thank you. So anyway, some people even walked out in disgust. Boyle looked on as paramedics treated fans struggling to cope with gruesome scenes. This is from The Sun, but I don't know who the reporter is, and I don't know whether the reporter actually saw this. The film is based on the true story of American Aaron Ralston. Aaron Ralston was at this screening, and they use his first name as opposed to his last name, which is usually what a reporter will do. So what does that mean? He's assisting in the selling of this film?
You're really suspicious about stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, don't you believe anything?
Yes, I do believe things, but can I just say something? Aaron, no reporter uses the first name of a principal of an individual he's writing a story about. You'll use Mr. Ralston or Ralston. Aaron, so that tells me something. This guy's an entertainment writer. He's got a stake in seeing the movie do well, or at least he wants Boyle to think he's got a stake in seeing the movie do well, because that means that Boyle will be accessible to other interviews. And once again, the audience is the person that's left standing there holding, you know, his wig. The most harrowing moment in this film, played by Spider-Man star James Franco, and he's a great actor. He was in Milk, James Franco was. Spider-Man, he was. What are the other movies he was in?
I think he was in, like, Natural Born Killers.
Natural Born Killers? What scene, what character did he play in that?
He played, like, the guy, Scagnetti.
No, he didn't. Sizemore did. What the hell movie was... I don't remember him in that movie, and I've seen it about 16 times. Franco attended Thursday's event at the London Film Festival with Britt Boyle and Aaron. The actor admitted people fainted during the test screenings. He said, quote, and this is true, it's not a horror film where the point is to gross people out. The real amputation, was he in Natural Born Killers or wasn't he?
No, he was in Pineapple Express.
Well, was he in Natural Born Killers is what I'm asking.
Yeah, no, he was in Pineapple Express.
In any event... We'll do it, and if you don't have a knife, you chew it off. This is what Boyle is saying. So it's not a horror film, he said. It's a real-life event. The actual amputation of this arm, it took this poor kid 40 minutes to do this. The scene is just a few minutes long. Hollywood Entertainment blog Deadline.com posted an entry by Nikki Fink about a similar incident at a U.S. screening. No, it wasn't a publicity stunt. She said, Fink, I'm told the two people fainted during a screening hosted by Toy Story 3 director Lee Unkrich of Danny Boyle's 127 Hours that took place on Friday night at Pixar's theater packed with about 300 people. Paramedics were called. The pair were declared fine. But I've been to these screenings, and they pack people into the theaters. You can't breathe. You can't, you can't, that stinks to high heaven. It's hot as living hell. People are elbow to elbow, shoulder to shoulder in these things. They're probably passing out because of the heat in the theater. But anyway.
Well, you think people fainted?
I think people fainted. Whether they fainted because of the movie or whether it was a very emotional film and the heat got to them, maybe. Did they throw up? Maybe. And maybe it was the food that the producers were serving to the people that were packed into the theaters for the test screening that made them puke.
Yeah, well, what do you think they're going to feed them, man? Bad clam? That's the only thing.
You got a straight face when you say that.
Yeah, I just noticed that.
What?
Bad clam?
Well, what? What's so funny about that? You feed a bad clam. They probably fed bad, ate bad, or maybe it was clam.
Yeah, I bet it was clam, man.
Yeah.
You guys are filthy.
877-876-PHIL, the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. A man beats up the priest he says molested him. We'll have that story for you. Let's find out if he got the right priest. You know, that might be, yeah. 877-876-PHIL, online at philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and watch the live streaming video right now.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hello, Dr. Green Thumb. Paging Dr. Green Thumb.
Time now for the Dr. Green Thumb report, then we'll get into the story of the guy that beat up the priest that he said molested him, but then they got into a lawsuit. The story may be 6-7 years old, for all I know. Anyway, parents urged to check for pot-laced Halloween candy. L.A. County officials were warning parents to be on the lookout for Halloween treats laced with marijuana. Officials say pot treats such as candy bars and lollipops are sold in marijuana dispensaries and could be circling around. These lollipops, candy bars, they look pretty legit. The problem is, if it gets in the wrong hands, the kid licks a lollipop, get ill and intoxicated, said Captain Ralph Ornelas of the Los Angeles County Fire Department. So make sure you know where your children are getting packaged, these little pre-packaged treats, right? Find out what the which house they got it from, too. That way you can go back to the house and beat the crap out of the adults there. See, that's the what I would do. Some treats look like regular cookies or candy, but they don't smell normal. Another clue, many of the products are not clearly labeled. Officers said parents can call the police if they see any suspicious treats. Yeah, okay, well, I guess that's what you should do. The department says it has never received a report of candy or snacks containing pot being distributed to Halloween trick-or-treaters, but they thought they'd make people paranoid this year. Anyway, Nebraska, man eats marijuana during traffic stop. This is making national news now. This used to happen every single night in this country, and nobody was any the wiser. Now it's, guess what? Anyway, Omaha police said a 20-year-old man tried to eat marijuana during a traffic stop to avoid being caught with a drug. Officers stopped a speeding Volvo on Monday near 90th and Douglas Streets, this is in Omaha, Nebraska, for traveling 48 miles per hour in a 35-mile-per-hour zone. They smelled the drug, and they said the passengers started acting nervous. Police said the man tried to eat the pot as he and the driver were being removed from the vehicle. He was charged with tampering with physical evidence and possession of drug paraphernalia. The driver was given a speeding ticket, according to police. They're now waiting for the guy to pass the weed. They'll have to sift through it and...
You kidding?
Yes, I'm kidding. Joints for Giants home runs offered at one marijuana dispensary in San Francisco. A San Francisco marijuana dispensary said patients will receive free joints every time the Giants hit a home run during the World Series. That's right, the Red Leaf Herbal Center said patients inside the medical marijuana dispensary at the time of the home run hit by the Giants, played in the World Series against the Tejas Rangers, will receive free marijuana cigarettes. TMZ.com was reporting on Thursday because that's where their reporters get most of what they smoke. Dispensary said it also is celebrating the Giants in the World Series with a discounted bright orange strain of cannabis and a giant punch beverage made using marijuana. The Giants have hit two home runs in the series so far. In Coos Bay, Oregon, a mix of butane gas and a spark from a freezer fridge causes an explosion inside a Coos Bay home on Monday. Now investigators believe the gas was used by a resident to extricate THC from marijuana. Coos County Sheriff's deputies and other local law enforcement officials responded to the explosion at a residence on Jerome Road at around 1 p.m. on Monday. The investigation revealed that one of the four subjects residing in the home, a cat named Freddie McMillan, had been extracting THC from the weed with a method using butane gas. It appears the gas had built it appears that the gas had built in the home, and when the freezer portion of the refrigerator freezer turned... Who cares? God! This is written for people that are stoned. Wow, it appears that the gang, you know, you're just like not never ending, man. Anyway, McMillan, who was uninjured, had just laid down on a couch to take a nap. Yeah, I'll bet he did. Which authorities say could have possibly saved her life. They believe that any person standing in the kitchen could have been severely injured. Oh, God. All right. Flat tire leads police to hundreds of pounds of weed. A Cincinnati man is behind bars after a routine tire change led police to 377 pounds of marijuana. Richard Lipscomb, age 50, was arrested around 1:30 in the afternoon on October the 21st by the Warren County Drug Task Force and charged with possession of the weed, trafficking in marijuana, cultivation of marijuana, possession of criminal tools, and just overall being a weird guy. Lebanon police responded to tire discounters because of Lipscomb's suspicious behavior. What does that mean, man? You've got a van full of weed. Oh, as he's getting his tire he had a tire going flat. He obviously didn't want to take the car in there with the weed in the car. He drove around in back of Brian's family pharmacy and took three plastic bags out of his car and put them down and went back to tire discounters. Police recovered the three bags, which contained 17 pounds of marijuana, and seized an undisclosed amount of cash. Finally, Bob Marley's daughter gets probation on a pot charge. The youngest child of reggae legend Bob Marley will spend 7 years on probation for growing weed in her Philadelphia home, 29-year-old Makeda Janesta Marley. The judge gave her a choice, a shorter prison term or a long stint on probation. She opted for the latter, of course, and she risks being jailed if she violates her probation terms. Okay, so that's that in the world of dope. Prop 19, I don't know. I at this particular point, I don't think it's going to pass. If it does pass, it's just seeing how things are going in California right now with medical marijuana. They've had to shut down medical marijuana clinics in L.A. I don't forget how many, but they put a cap now on 70 dispensaries, I think, because many of the people who run those dispensaries were idiots. They were allowing weed to be smoked on the premises. Guys were walking in and out of the place with joints in their mouth. You could smell the dope a block away. I mean, you knew that was going to happen. You knew that people were going to open up dispensaries that were so stupid they would get everybody busted. And that's what happened. So now you're going to legalize dope? How's that going to work? You're going to have it sold where? People are going to be smoking it where? It ain't going to happen, man. It's not going to happen. No wonder it's losing. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Man arrested for beating priest he accused of molesting him.
How do you know that this is the guy that did it?
Well, it turns out there was a lawsuit, but that makes this story even more curious. A man allegedly molested three decades ago by a priest was arrested Friday on charges that he lured the clergyman to the lobby of a Jesuit retirement home and beat him in front of shocked witnesses. William Lynch, age 43, was booked on suspicion of assault with a deadly weapon for the May 10th attack that sent the Reverend Gerald Lindner to the hospital with bruises and lacerations. Lynch harbored a fantasy for years of confronting the priest, who also allegedly molested his little brother. Sung said Lynch attacked this is according to Rick Sung, the Santa Clara County Sheriff's spokesman. He said that Lynch attacked the 65-year-old priest after he failed to recognize him at the Jesuit Sacred Heart Retirement Home in Los Gatos. The attack occurred in a small room adjoining the lobby. They're saying was pretty close to beating him to death, according to defense attorney Pat Harris. They're essentially saying that he waited all these years, then took out his revenge. It's sort of the ultimate revenge story. Lynch and his younger brother settled with the Jesuits of the California Province, a Roman Catholic religious order, for $625,000 in 1998 after alleging that Lindner abused them in 1975 during weekend camping trips in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Aha. The boys, who were 7 and 5 at the time, were raped in the woods and forced to have oral sex with each other. Good God. While Lindner watched, according to this guy Harris, who's the defense attorney. Now, you have to understand, that's the defense attorney talking. Oh, what, are you going to protect people that are molesters, Henry? No, I just like to point these things out. Lindner had been accused of abuse by nearly a dozen people, including his own sister and nieces and nephews. So this guy is a freak. Lynch was to be released on $25,000 bail, according to his attorney. The attorney negotiated his client's surrender and said Lynch will plead not guilty at his arraignment sometime next month.
I don't get it. Who beat up who?
This guy Lynch beat up the priest.
Yeah, but the priest molested him when? In 1998.
Yeah, when he was 30?
No, not when he was 30. The allegation is the priest molested him in the 70s when he was a kid. He was 7 and his brother was 5.
Oh, okay. And then they sued?
They sued. And then they settled, and that was 10 years ago, and then he visited him today or last week.
And beat the crap out of him.
And beat the crap out of him, yeah. So there you have the nice logical sequence of events. The crime, the suit, and he beat the crap out of him. It's a criminal act. I don't know how this guy escaped being charged with that. We'll be back with more world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Henry. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
I feel like I have to, you know...
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I feel like I have to just conclude on the story of this man beating the priest that molested him, because it's a gruesome story, but I always want to make sure that the facts we are giving you add up. Because if it says something like, well, you know, this happened and that happened, but we're not sure, I don't like to leave anybody with the story hanging. What happened was this guy Lindner, this priest, molested this man, Mr. Lynch, and his younger brother when they were 7 and 5, and it was, I'm not going to go through the details of it again, it's the most vile and disgusting thing you can imagine. Now this old bastard is in a retirement home. Now in 1998, the brothers sued and settled with the Jesuits of the California province, which is the name of the Roman Catholic religious order. They settled for $625,000. They alleged that Lindner abused them in 1975 during weekend camping trips. Now this guy comes to the home, as you know, and we reported, and beats the crap out of this priest, almost beats him to death, according to his attorney. The attorney negotiated his client's surrender, and we come to find out that this Lindner was also charged with and was named in lawsuits between 1973 and 1985 that were part of a big settlement that the Los Angeles Archdiocese settled for. $600 million, you probably remember it. 550 plaintiffs in 2007. I remember that. It was horrible. So what I'm trying to figure out here, though, is what happens between, you know, now and way back when this guy is walking around free as a bird after these little boys and others were sexually molested by this turd. Now, the guy beat the crap out of this guy. It says here the father shows up in the lobby, at which point he was asked by the suspect if he knew who he was. When the father answered no, that's when the suspect started attacking. He was punching him in the face and all over the body. After the father goes down, then the suspect took off. Lindner was able to drive himself to the hospital. He did not return a call left on his answering machine. He has previously denied abusing the Lynch boys and has not been criminally charged. The abuse falls outside the statute of limitations, although he did settle. He was removed from ministry and placed at the Los Gatos retirement home in 2001. He was named in two additional lawsuits between 1973 and 1985, and they settled for $625,000. In 1998, after they alleged that Lindner abused them at a 1975 weekend camping trip. The provincial, that I guess is the guy that runs this retirement home, said Lindner had fully recovered and resumed his work at the retirement home, where he helps care for 75 retired and invalid priests. This guy almost beat him to death? How the hell did he almost beat him to death, and the guy is walking around, you know, looking good and helping people? So you can tell, you know, there's a lot of emotions running through this thing. I'm trying to figure out, first of all, while they settled, and this guy swears this dude's the guy that did it to him, I don't doubt that, okay, but I'm wondering about everybody else involved in this thing. What are they looking at? Who do they know and why? Why, he almost beat him to death. The guy drove himself to the hospital and he's back to work today? That ain't being beaten to death. As you can imagine, it's a very emotionally distressing to go through something like this. He hasn't spoken a lot about it. He's living a quiet life of prayer and service within our community. These guys got away with bloody murder, these priests. You know, when they get outside of the statute of limitations, you can't do anything to them. And so what? So these civil cases are brought. And this is why we have, you know, the judicial system that we have in this country. And it's I think it's fantastic, because if you can't get justice, justice is denied you for whatever reason, civil action is available to you. Lynch declined an interview Friday, but in a 2002 Los Angeles Times article, he said he'd had nightmares for years. He battled depression and alcoholism and had attempted suicide twice because of this priest's abuse. Many times I thought of driving down to L.A. and confronting Father Jerry. I wanted to exercise all of the rage and anger and bitterness he put into me. Hey, by the way, just a note to Eminem. In your song, I'm Not Afraid, where you say I'm exercising the demons, and then you say they're doing jumping jacks. It's not exercise as in jumping jacks. It's exorcise as in casting them out.
Yeah, I remember he did that. Is that dumb or something?
No, I wouldn't call it dumb.
What'd he do?
In Eminem's song, he says, I'm exercising the demons. Those MFers are doing jumping jacks. You ain't exercising them, man. You're exorcising them.
So now Eminem a dumbass?
I didn't say he's a dumbass. He just used the word the wrong way. All right, anyway. Lynch told the newspaper, you can't put into words what this guy did to me. He stole my innocence. He destroyed my life. Well, all right, man. It's messed up.
What are you going to do?
Well, I mean, the guy sued. He and his brother got 600 G's. I know money isn't everything. This guy still has a lot of rage to get out of him, and he needs to deal with it some way, because if he winds up killing that priest, then he winds up killing himself. I mean, you know, it's obvious that the justice was denied him in one way, but the $625,000 settlement, I guess that's supposed to make you happy? I don't know. Sour grapes after The Apprentice. Masa Saidi Aksui, how do you pronounce this name, takes on Trump, accuses him of rating attractiveness of female contestants. Well, of course he does.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I guess she didn't like that. I'm kidding, but, you know. Anyway, few people will take a billionaire head on, but that's just what Masa Saidi Akukulu Walabatara, I don't know, her name is like spelled A-Z-C-U-Y.
A-Z. Spell it again.
A-Z.
A-Z.
C-U.
C-U.
Y.
Y. Ask who?
Yeah.
Ask who?
Yeah.
It's Askui. Askui.
Gesundheit.
You're welcome. Get out of here. Anyway, this woman, Askui, she took on the billionaire after being fired this week. Now, while Masa was cast as a liar in the edited version of the show, she took to YouTube in order to clear her name and make some allegations about her perceived mistreatment of some, what she perceives as mistreatment of some of the female contestants. It wasn't about being fired. 15 out of 16 of us get fired, she told AOL. It was about being branded a liar. What I had to say was the truth. I just couldn't stop myself. It's not my character to say quiet. All right, I don't watch this show, man, but in any event, on last night's episode of NBC's The Apprentice, here is Masa getting canned.
She told the men's team in the last test how much we made in the test, so the men knew.
You told them, 320.
Now, wait a minute, did you say that?
Absolutely.
You mean before we told, before we came
before up? We knew the boardroom.
Is that true, Masa?
That is 100%
true. Is that true, Masa?
Yes. The lying is sort of... It just adds another element to it. But the fact of the matter is that she's disloyal.
Think she's lying?
Yes.
I have never lied, Mr. Trump. I am not lying.
Here we go.
She said well over 1,000. Why would I lie? I am not lying.
Would you shut your mouth and stop screaming and with my name in vain? You think you made a mistake?
I absolutely made a mistake.
Masa, you're fired.
All right, here in a video she posted on YouTube, Masa takes on Trump.
Mr. Trump, I know that many people are intimidated by you because you're a billionaire. They're afraid to point out when you make a mistake. They're scared to stand up against you. Mm-hmm. But a prosecutor who you knowingly and falsely branded as a liar has no such fear, sir. I don't know why you ever thought I was going to sit back quietly and allow my entire legal future to be placed in jeopardy when it is my duty as an attorney to address this and to clear my name.
Why'd you go on the show?
Yeah, she's going to get... Trump's going to kick her ass.
You should know that.
Why'd you go on the show? Did you think I was going to sit back? If you thought there was any risk at all, what the hell are you doing on the show? You took the risk. I understand there are legal concerns, But opinions are opinions. And he didn't call you the liar. That other chick called you the liar. Here is the former Apprentice contestant. She makes allegations of misogynistic behavior on the show. Oh, so now what she's going to do is she's now going to accuse Trump of being a woman hater, and we'll take it into the sewer, and that's what happens, and, you know, hell hath no fury.
Continually in your boardroom, you would point out who you found to be attractive or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would take the humiliation one step further by asking the men's team to rate us according to who they found to be most attractive. But Mr. Trump, they were our competition, not our judges, sir. And we were computing for an executive position in one of your companies, not to be some tiara-wearing pageant princess in the swimsuit competition.
You lost, lady. If you had won, you would not be saying any of these things. And if you think, I'm saying this not because I'm necessarily a Donald Trump fan, but he ain't stupid. And as a matter of fact, of all of these clowns that get on television and pretend like they are TV personalities, these cats with money, Mark Cuban, you know, some of these jackasses. Trump, to my way of thinking, seems to have his stuff together better than any of them. I'm telling you right now, I'm not saying she's doing something dangerous. If she has a case, she's got a case. I don't think he did any of this stuff. I don't think the guy's that dumb. And coming out after you get fired and saying it after the fact and saying, you know what, here's what happened, and, you know, it's very, very difficult for people to take you seriously when we know, you know, the whole world knows, had you not been fired, were you still on the show, you wouldn't have come forward with any of this stuff. Because all of that stuff is nothing compared to winning and working for the guy, which is what you wanted to do. And if you've got a reputation as an attorney, if you have any real reputation at all anywhere in this world as a business person, what the hell are you doing going on that show? It's a show. A show!
Yeah, but you gotta make a lot of money.
Make a lot of money doing what, man?
Working for Donald Trump and stuff.
But the TV entertainment aspect of this thing means that you also run the risk of being set up as some kind of a clown. Now, that is what people don't think about. They think they're going to acquit themselves well. They think they're going to look fantastic. They think they're going to know what to say. They think they're going to know how to say it. They're totally in control. They have no idea what they're getting into. They got a professional reputation. They're going to go for it. They're going to work for Donald Trump. They find out what the reality of this thing is. And they wind up getting their ass handed to them. And they wind up looking bad. And they wind up blaming somebody else, in this woman's case at least. So,
yeah, that's a great show. I would risk it.
You'd risk what?
If he's going to call me a liar or something.
Yeah, man, you're not going to be on a show, man, when you think you're going to work for Donald Trump.
Maybe.
What would you do for Donald Trump?
What do you mean?
What would you do for Donald Trump?
Anything those people do.
You ain't a lawyer, man. That woman's a lawyer.
Well, what the... Somebody's not a lawyer.
You couldn't do anything for Donald Trump, man, that didn't involve carrying plastic bags someplace.
What's that mean?
What do you mean, what does that mean?
I mean, taking out the trash, man.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, body parts or something. I didn't know what you...
Get out of here, body parts. Maybe, I don't know. All right, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, coming up next here as we get ready for a, oh, yeah, weekend. A boss encourages his employees to vote for the Republicans if they want a raise. That's coming up next here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
What is it? What's this the theme to? What's this the theme to, you guys? 28 days later. 28 days later, yeah.
Whoa! Cut it out!
Bud got scared of that one, didn't he?
Yeah, he got all scared.
Shut up!
Woo-hoo-hoo. Rage virus, Bud.
Shut up, man. I don't believe in it at all.
Oh, you don't believe it? Well, that's good that you don't believe in it, because it doesn't exist, bud. That's 28 days later. I got one more for you here before we conclude our broadcast. So, Halloween. Have a safe Halloween. Make sure the kids are safe. And remember what we do around the Hendry household. We keep a bag of candy for the kids, and we keep a loaded shotgun for the weirdos. So, here we go. What's this one, man?
Now, the remake on 9/11 Dead. I didn't think that was good.
You didn't like this one as good as the original, no.
What about that new one they got now on the AMC?
They have The Walking Dead on AMC. I don't know when that's going to be debuting. This on AMC, is it Monday? I forget. This is Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Sunday night, Walking Dead on AMC. All right, 877-876-PHIL. One more little story here. McDonald's employees told by franchise owner that unless Republicans win, they won't get raises or benefits. There may be something rotten at McDonald's, and it's not a year-old Happy Meal. Now, who would engage in that kind of sophomoric humor? And when I say sophomoric, what I'm basically saying is not funny. You got it. Huffington Post. Anyway, Paul Siegfried, the owner of a franchise in Canton, Ohio, enclosed a handbill in employees' paychecks that threatened lower wages and benefits if Republicans don't win on Tuesday. That's a pretty stupid thing to do. As the election season is here, we wanted you to know which candidates will help our business grow in the future, reads the letter. As you know, the better our business does, it enables us to invest in our people and our restaurants. This sounds exactly like Bob Green tonight.
Yeah, I wonder where you got the idea. I mean, I wonder where he got the idea.
I don't know. The note ends with a list of candidates McDonald's believes, or is it Paul Siegfried, will help our business move forward. It names Republicans John Kasich for governor, Rob Portman for Senate, and Jim Renacci for Congress. With the letter was a biography of Renacci or Renacci, or, the handbill, and it's so long that it ain't that one cat with the weird hair, man. Anyway, the handbill endorses candidates who have, in essence, pledged to roll back the minimum wage and eviscerate the safety net that protects the most vulnerable members of our workforce. This is attorney Alan Shulman of Canton law firm Shulman, Zimmerman & Associates, which received the documents from an employer who stepped forward. An employer. Perhaps one of the managers.
Yeah, probably a guy that managed a restaurant, because this other guy owned the franchise.
He's a franchise owner?
Yeah.
That's an asinine thing to do. It's an asinine thing to do, man. I mean, you can talk about, well, you know, we support this and we support that. You know, I don't know what's legal. I've never been in a workplace where there's been anything that has, I work in talk radio, so I don't know what to tell you. But I've never worked in the workplace environment where we not only have talk show hosts, but we also have office people, we have clerical people, we have accountants, we have receptionists, we have salespeople. I've never seen or heard of that kind of campaigning for somebody. I've heard people talking in the lunchroom, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, do you ever see anybody pass out a picture of, like, Obama or any of that?
It's Obama, man, not Obama.
Well, that's what I mean.
Why do you keep calling him Obama? Is that song, The Name Game?
Yeah. Shirley, Bo Burley, Banana Fan of Bo Burley.
Boy, that is retarded, man.
No kidding, man. How old that song?
I like it.
Shirley, Bo Burley. As this election season weren't already tense enough, fears about voter fraud and some of the steps that are being taken to combat it have created more worries. With control of Congress in the balance, both political parties are gearing up for a possibly wild and woolly election day. Legal war room, roving teams of lawyers, hotlines, and poll challenges are all part of the strategy that Democrats and Republicans will employ Tuesday to handle suspected fraud or to help voters whose right to vote is questioned. You know, it's good what happened in 2000 because this kind of voter fraud, if you want to call it, or suspect vote counting, or faulty voter machines, or dimpled Chads, or, you know, or a guy named Chad with dimples, whatever. This stuff was, you don't think the 2000 is the first time it ever happened, do you?
Well, that's what they said.
Oh, is that what they said? Do you think that because the stuff came, because that in the year 2000, they found out that there were dimpled Chads and all this jazz. You think it's the first time that stuff was going on?
What are you saying?
What am I saying? I'm telling you that this stuff was going on for years before that.
Yeah, well, that means that maybe they got the wrong guy elected.
No kidding. We probably elected the wrong guy. Excuse me, you know.
Elected
the wrong guy plenty of times. That's what I was saying last night. So this is good. I'm glad this is happening now because we can get this stuff out of our system. If there's a way we can come up with a machine, great. If there's a way we can come up with a way to vote, fantastic. This jazz about, you know, fraud this and legal teams here and there and their war room over here. All that does, you know, these cats are all just waiting to jump on something, however insignificant, and turn this process into a joke. The issue is also on the Justice Department's radar. It will post federal monitors at selected polling places around the country, and prosecutors, civil rights attorneys, and the FBI will be tasked with handling election-related complaints that day. A special toll-free number, 1-800-253-3931, will be available for complaints about ballot access. A lot is just precautionary and not out of the ordinary. What's different this year is that candidates and others are also getting into the act. So this is just concerns about election fraud and voter intimidation. That's what they were talking about back in 08. They were talking about that in 04. And they had those, who were those guys they had?
Like the Black Panthers.
Those clowns were standing, the Black Panthers were standing there looking bad and stupid. What were they going to do? What were they going to do? You talk about intimidating people. Those two guys were intimidating people, you know.
Yeah, well, there weren't any white people there.
I don't care, but they intimidated some of the black people. Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wagon, and our associate producer and screener Dan Northcraft, philhendryshow.com for your Phil Hendry Show radio needs. Have a good weekend. Happy Halloween. Woo. Cut it out.
Phil Hendry.